the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Welcome to Pat Trek. This is a show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winninger, to Star Trek The Next Generation, a show that I've never seen.
And I have seen a ton of times. And Patrick, I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
It's all right. Season one finale.
Yeah, we're finally done.
We're out of the woods. Or so people tell me.
Yeah, season two is pretty good. It's got a couple flops in it and a couple really bright spots, in my opinion.
Oh, cool. Well,
so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
We're joined today by Max Temkin. Welcome to the show, man.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. I'm very excited to be here.
So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how big of a Star Trek fan are you?
I know there's bigger Star Trek fans out there, so I feel bad claiming the 10 for myself.
Oh, wow.
But I'll go like a 9.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
If there's Star Trek stuff out there, I've consumed it. Like, I've read the books, like...
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
I saw a great post you did a couple months ago on, I think it was Deep Space Nine, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've done some like episode guides to help people get into like Next Gen and Deep Space Nine. It's just very exciting. Like the way I got to see Next Generation when I was growing up was my dad recorded a lot of the episodes on VHS cassette, but the quality was bad and I had to like fast forward through the commercials and I only had like 20 episodes.
Oh, and yeah. It
was enough to make me a fan like for the rest of my life. But now it's like you should watch the entire Star Trek back catalog on Netflix and like HD. In order with no commercials.
Isn't that awesome?
It's an embarrassment of riches. It's crazy.
And you can just cruise through them. I'd mentioned this before the mics were on, but I'm watching Deep Space Nine right now, and I'm killing like 3 episodes a night pretty easily, and I'm really enjoying myself.
Yeah, I have to hold off.
Yeah, you can't. It's going to ruin our show.
I know. I've had to. I got to wait every week.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and Max, you mentioned this before we turned on the mics. We're going to have no factual errors on this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I personally guarantee it.
Hear that, listener? If I screw up, Max is going to correct me here on the spot, so you don't have to. So let's start with our production fun fact of the day. It's not really a production fact, but this is the first time where we know what year we're currently in.
Oh, what year did they say?
2364.
2364.
Yeah, so it's official. It's 2364.
I believe it's actually the first time in the entire Star Trek canon that they like pin a year to it.
Oh.
Yep. Yes, yeah. It is. According to the internet, you are correct.
There we go.
Wow.
One for one so far.
Hang on, Batten, I actually don't know the most that you can bat.
It's a thousand.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Which I don't know why a batting average is that way, but this isn't Bat Trek,
right.
So let's not get into it.
That's a different show.
Yeah, we'll start that one next year.
That probably does say something about me that I know all of the Star Trek trivia, like just by memory, like 5 years later from the last time I saw this episode, but I don't actually know how batting averages work.
I actually do listen to a couple White Sox podcasts, and they are incredible. Incredibly sad.
Why?
Because at the beginning of this season, it was just like, it's going to be great.
It seemed that way.
And then last month, it was just, oh God, what happened? And that's how it's been every single year.
Yeah, since 2005
right.
At least.
But this isn't Bat Trek.
No, it is not.
that'll be your season 7 rewatch experience for Next Generation.
We could rewatch the 2005
Voice Talk season. Anyway, couple notes for Patrick's log. What was going on May 16th, 1988? That's when the season 1 finale aired on CBS. So one thing that happened was Surgeon General C. Everett Koop declared that nicotine was as addictive as heroin and cocaine.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's huge for the 80s because heroin and cocaine were really vilified.
Right. And this was like in the 90s, there was a big war against cigarettes, basically. There was a huge public health campaign against it that the, you know, tobacco companies fought back real hard against.
Yeah.
And so this was kind of the start of it.
Yeah, and I just watched the original Ghostbusters because, you know, the new ones came out and everything. And there were so many cigarettes.
Yeah, there's
everybody
that famous scene
constantly.
Where, like, the cigarette is, like, hanging from Dan Aykroyd's mouth.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good. It's good we finally...
Yeah, it's good we're starting to realize, oh, yeah, by the way, these will kill you.
It's
no good reason.
It's part of the original, like, Star Trek pitch that nobody smokes in the 24th century, which was very... Gene Roddenberry had had these rules that he wrote out of like how the universe worked.
No kidding. I didn't even notice
yeah.
that.
So Gene Roddenberry is like the creator of the Star Trek universe. And he, yeah. he came up with these rules of and some of them drove the writers crazy. Like he was like, there can't be any conflict between Starfleet people. Like humans have evolved past
right.
conflict.
I've noticed that's a problem with the first season.
I mean, right. Because how do you write a show where there's no conflict, right? Or nobody does anything dangerous is another one of his. But there's also rules of like, there's no piracy and there's no smoking.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Man, writing out space pirates? There's a lot of cool stuff could have been done. The other thing that happened
just
was...
Just not human space pirates.
Oh, okay.
I mean, what are the Ferengi?
Yeah, that's true.
Right,
yeah.
The other interesting thing that happened was the U.S. Supreme Court decided in the case of California v. Greenwood that police do not have a search warrant to search discarded garbage. Yeah, cops in Laguna Beach, California went through a guy's garbage to find drugs. And the Supreme Court was like, yeah, nope, Fourth Amendment covers that. You got to get a search warrant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, yep, that's what was going on.
Awesome. Well, let's get into the episode.
Sure. This is the Neutral Zone. I've had a lot of like questions about the Neutral Zone specifically.
Oh, great time to ask them.
Well, I've asked them like before on the show, and I just didn't fully understand.
Well, I equated it to sort of like international waters.
Is it like no man's land?
Well, I think it's an area where both parties can be, but probably shouldn't be.
Oh, okay.
Right, and if you cross over into like Romulan territory, like in this episode, or in Federation territory, then it could be seen as an act of war.
Oh, okay. So that's the title of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really start talking about that at all. The main thing that we're dealing with at the beginning of this episode is Riker is doing the first officer's log because Picard is off at some conference at a starbase.
Yeah.
They found an ancient capsule, and it looks like a satellite.
Right.
Like a modern day satellite in our world, just floating outside the Enterprise. And they're first like just going to let it go. But Data wants to inspect it because, it's a piece of history. They got nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they beam Data and Worf just into this ship that's like this derelict ship. And they, like, what the hell? They don't have spacesuits or anything? Data, I can understand. He's an android.
Yeah, he doesn't need one.
Yeah, but they get there, and Max, you pointed out that, like, the first thing Data says, like, minimal oxygen atmosphere. Yeah. It's like, you found that out before?
I think they've, like, confirmed prior to this that they can just, like, scan over there and make sure that the atmosphere is breathable. You'd think that the better way to check that would be to, like, do it in advance versus just showing up and being like, yeah, it's... That'll do.
Yeah. I know. It's like,
what if it wouldn't?
What if Worf just showed up and exploded because there's no pressure? That could have happened.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, they're fine.
Yeah.
One of my other favorite weird inconsistencies in this episode, and we can get into like how I think I have a theory as to how some of the weirdness in this episode came about, but I love that when in the beginning of the episode, Data detects this satellite floating by, and he's like, hey, can I go check that out? And Riker's like, no, let nature take its course. It's going to fly into the sun. That's not weird.
It's not what they would do.
Yeah. That's
it's also not nature, because it's like a man-made thing, right?
That's just so not Star Trek of like, it's probably not interesting.
I mean, we're a science ship.
Not explore stuff.
And Data points out, it's like, we don't see stuff like this every day.
Yeah.
We had a dude from another dimension come onto the ship and, take us to the Trapper Keeper dimension. And you remember that?
Yeah.
This is more rare than that. And then he's like, man, whatever.
Yeah.
So they're exploring the capsule, looking at the solar stuff. And then Worf sees a door and he tries to run into it to make it like the sensors go.
I thought this was great.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So Data has to show him how to like open the door and they find like cryogenic pods. Most of them containing skeletons or empty, but they find three people that appear to be alive or at least not decomposed.
Yeah, because there's several dead people in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
a couple empty ones, which I wonder what happened there.
Yeah. And it doesn't really explain
why there's a couple empty
ones. Why there's empty cryogenic chambers.
I thought it was going to go like Danny Boyle's Sunshine the first night. So yeah. Like there's going to be some like crazy third act like horror movie twist.
Yeah. Right.
But Data is able to like bring the cryogenic pods back to the Enterprise. And Picard is like coming back from whatever conference he was at.
Just to back up for a moment, Data's got to fight to be able to bring
he's got
to
convince Riker.
Yeah, Riker doesn't really want...
He doesn't want to deal with it. He wanted to throw this thing into the sun.
Right.
Data's like, what else are we going to do? We can't just like leave him here.
Yeah, it doesn't seem appropriate.
And I thought that was weird, because he has to explain to Picard when Picard comes back later.
Well,
why
Picard's
he did
like,
it.
Why are these people here too? He questions it.
Yeah.
Nobody told me that they were here. I've got really more important things to do than save lives.
It kind of seems like they would save the lives.
Picard's line, he says to Data, that I also think is really funny. He goes, "But Data, they were already dead. I mean, what more could have happened to them? They're alive now, so we have to treat them like human beings."
Oh, it's like way to go. You saved their lives,
yeah,
Data.
Like, yeah. Yeah, like he's so frustrated. He's like, "And now we have to treat them like humans?" Like, ugh. Yeah. Like, yeah.
But the first thing that Picard does when he comes back, he's talking to Geordi, and he's like, "All right, got to set a course to the neutral zone." And he explains the officers in that conference room thing that they got that, hey, we've got a lot of outposts on the near the border of the neutral zone that have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Something is up. You know, the Enterprise D is the best ship in the galaxy, I assume.
Yep.
And so they're going to be sent to investigate. But they think it's the Romulans that did it.
Hell yeah!
And I'm not entirely sure, because I haven't seen the original series.
Right.
So I don't really know like what the relationship is with the Romulans. It sounds like there's some kind of Cold War.
Right. So they're a cousin to the Vulcans, essentially.
Oh, that's why they look like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're also, their demeanor is similar, but they're a bit more, I don't know the right way to put it, evil.
Oh, okay. So yeah, they're bad guys.
The mythology, so it's like a Romulus Remus mythology. So it's like in ancient times, long before Star Trek happened, the Romulans and the Vulcans used to be one species, but then they split up and the Vulcans just sort of set out on this like meditative path to like purge themselves of emotion and have like the hyperlogical society. And the Romulans, I don't know, I mean, I guess they just didn't change.
Oh.
And they sort of developed into this like sort of neo-Roman territorial, sort of like creepy militaristic.
Oh, weird. So they're like space fascists.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
very
they're like,
much so.
They're like space Romans.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they're very smart and calculating. And it's something I really like about them as a big bad, if you will, as opposed to the Ferengi, which we've already met, which were in a similar position.
Yeah.
Who just seem like money grubbing and silly. The Romulans actually seem intimidating.
Well, so they believe that these people destroyed the bases, or it's assumed that that's their main suspicion. But they also mentioned they haven't contacted the Romulans for like 50 years. They mentioned this some incident that
ended in a lot of bloodshed.
Ended in a lot of lives lost, and they don't get into it.
They were like the main antagonists of Star Trek 5 and 6, the movies. And, you know, there was a lot of cool, like, space battles and tension there, and then they just weren't introduced in Next Generation. And there was, you know, you can imagine, like, if you're a big Star Trek fan when this
Where
was
are the Romulans?
On the air, well, you don't know, right? It's like, well, what are they bringing over from the original series, and what's not coming over? And, you know, thus far, there's been no mentions of the Romulans, and, you know, that's why there's that great line at the end where they're like, "We're back." And as a fan, you're like, "Oh, shit, here we go." Yeah.
Well, the situation we're in now, though, it's, you know, haven't spoken to them for 50 years. Or so since the Tomid incident, which they don't really explain what happened. We know it was bad.
Was that in Star Trek V?
It was some sort of terrible battle between the Federation and the Romulans, and it led to the treaty that bans the Federation from having cloaking devices. So by treaty, some civilizations in the Alpha Quadrant are allowed to have cloaking devices, basically like the Klingons, the Romulans, I think the Cardassians, and the Federation is not allowed to research cloaking technology.
Huh.
And this will sort of come into play later in TNG, and it's a big plot point in Deep Space Nine.
Interesting.
Why would the Federation agree to that?
Yeah, that's weird.
That seems really short-sighted.
Yeah.
Considering cloaking, the power of cloaking technology.
I would guess if you were a writer of TNG and it's like, well, cloaking technology is this like ultra, it's a very powerful sort of reconnaissance and battle technology, and it's just sort of not in keeping with the Federation, like, shouldn't really have that thematically.
Right.
Like, if you're, you know, in the Star Trek, like, RPG, like, you wouldn't give that ability to your, like, Federation character because it's, like, it's sort of deceptive and sneaky, and it's, like, it's just not their thing. So
yeah.
I think it's a good way to write around it where it's like, well, you don't want to have the Federation be like militaristically incompetent. So we'll just say like they're banned by treaty from having cloaking.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, what benefits do they get? Do they have better?
I would guess it maybe it's like,
there's some trade off.
They can move, go faster or something.
Yeah. it's basically
get a +3 to attack. But
I think that's what establishes the neutral zone. So basically, like, the Romulans are like very militaristic and expansionist and sort of imperial.
So they got hemmed in exchange for
and they agreed to this like demilitarized zone. This is how foreign policy works with North Korea.
Yeah.
We're like, listen, we'll have the DMZ and we won't like, you know, come in like invade invade North Korea, but you guys don't develop nuclear weapons, and everyone's happy.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the situation they're in, and they're warning Captain Picard that you got to really think about what's going on here, because this could alter the course of history. Mm-hmm. So be prepared to fight, but don't go in there guns blazing.
Right.
Because that could be exactly what they want. And meanwhile, this is where we have the scene where Picard goes to the sick bay, and you know, Dr. Crusher is explaining the situation with the cryogenically frozen people. And they're going through this whole thing about how, like, you know, cryogenically freezing was a big fad in the 20th century, and all these rich people did it, you know, because they thought that they could be unfrozen in the future.
Because they had a fear of death.
Right. And I remember people always making fun of, you know, like Ted Williams freezing his head and Walt Disney doing that. And, you know, it was always a punchline. But now we're seeing it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, that worked.
Right. Which I think is great.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
I'm hoping Walt Disney is one of the people that...
Turns out he isn't. yeah. Turns out he isn't. They unfreeze Claire Raymond, Ralph Offenhaus, and a guy named LQ Sonny Clemons.
LQ
is a character. Claire Raymond is a homemaker. Ralph Offenhaus is like some kind of like billionaire financier, and Sonny Clemons is some kind of country music singer.
Right.
And they mentioned that he has, like, the other people just died of like normal causes, like a stroke or heart attack. Sonny Clemons has destroyed his liver and all other bodily systems from multiple drug addictions and alcoholism.
Yeah.
And he's just is like, well, better freeze my body.
That's why I think it's a lot about this character.
I mean, I think that's a good lesson of this episode, is it turns out that there really are no consequences of heavy drinking and drug use,
right,
given a long enough time frame.
And yeah.
And enough money.
Yeah. And enough
freeze
money.
Yourself.
Yeah. You just go right up until the moment that you flame out, and then you freeze yourself.
Yeah. So Claire is pretty much just shocked. She's in shock. She didn't freeze herself. Her husband did.
So, which she is really kind of mean to her husband this whole time, and every time she describes her husband and his incompetence, and this,
I would be pretty pissed if I had like died and someone did this that it wasn't in my will. I'd just be like,
but he's so sweet. I feel like he is vilified for no reason. He loved his wife. She died of a sudden brain aneurysm, and he took care of her.
And it froze her in a capsule and put her on a satellite. Is basically what happened. They explain that the reason they're on a satellite is because. Or Ralph Offenhaus apparently has invested in a lot of these cryogenic companies. And he explains, well, we're in space because many of the ones on Earth kept failing because of power outages. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, killed everyone inside. So they put them in a satellite that's solar powered, and there's less chance of failure. So that's why they were in space.
Yep.
Sonny,
yeah, I'm not really sure the like physics. I've never really thought about this, but the like physics of them being that far away, because they establish at the end that they're like months by warp speed. They're like months.
How the hell do they get
there?
They're
at least by warp speed, which is like faster than light travel.
Right.
They're months away from Earth. So like how many, like you'd have to be, I mean, we're talking a scale of millions of years to be that far out.
Right. And it's only been like what, 350?
Yeah, but they could have caught continuity error in Star Trek. What do we win? We got one.
Yeah. So
why wouldn't they be orbiting the Earth anyway? Isn't that what would have been set
up? How did it break?
Yeah.
Through
what kind of
Earth's
a plan
orbit?
Is that to just randomly launch yourself out
I
like,
know.
Into space?
Maybe someone will find you later. Yeah. But it turns out it worked.
Yeah.
And Sonny does not appear confused or upset at all. He's like, "Oh, cool."
Yeah.
It's the future.
Yeah, I like this
guy. I can destroy my body again, and everyone forgot all the horrible stuff I did. It's like, all right, cool. And Offenhaus, though, is only concerned about his investments and wants to call his lawyer. And everyone is struggling to like explain to him. It's like, well, this guy can't find out money doesn't exist anymore. Please nobody tell him. He's going to be so mad.
This guy, of the three of them, I like him the least.
Yeah, and he ends up serving a purpose later, actually.
Yeah.
But...
Well, because he knows when someone's mouth is dry.
He's good at negotiating. anyway, we're back on the bridge, and Picard is, like, talking about what to do with the Romulans. Like, they're discussing a very serious situation. And then Offenhaus, I guess he saw Riker use the comm panel, and figures out how to do it. And he contacts, like, everyone when they're in a very important meeting that could decide... You know, whether
what they're going to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just complaining about the service on the ship. And he's like, you know, you should have it like this cruise ship I was on. And they're just like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? And he's just acting like some kind of rich asshole, basically.
Yeah. And I think it's important to stop for a moment on what the crew was discussing.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the level of violence in which they should be approaching this threat. And they're Worf and Riker think that Picard is being a little too soft.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Worf hates Romulans.
Right. They killed his parents.
Yeah.
This was a big... Have you guys picked up on the, like, Worf is wrong about everything?
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah.
This is a big episode. Like, literally every line that Worf says immediately is followed up by, no, Mr. Worf. Like, yeah. How dare you say that?
Yeah.
Like, I can't open a door. He, like, wants to go in guns blazing.
I was hoping we were getting away from that with Worf.
Because there's a couple times he's been right now.
Yep.
Okay. I think we're up to once, maybe twice the whole season.
But, like, the first or second episode, he, like, tries to shoot the screen, mm-hmm. And it's just like, what the hell are you doing? Why did they write this character this way? Because he went through academy, you know, he's got to be pretty smart, but they just write him like an idiot. And I hope we're moving away from that.
Me too.
Eventually.
Oh, and just one more thing about Picard's position on this that I think is important is he has a brief conversation with Deanna Troi about the Romulans.
Oh, right.
And she tells him they're going to wait for you to make the move first, and they're going to react to that.
Yeah.
So I think that is in Picard's mind throughout this entire episode. And one of the reasons he's being a bit softer than
He can't make the first move.
Yeah.
I think, like, this episode also, like, you know, among Star Trek fans, like, this episode gets a good amount of hate for sort of having, like, two seemingly unrelated plots that don't really have anything to do with each other. And I think as a Star Trek fan, like, it's way easier to just care about the Romulan thing, and you have this sort of goofy B plot that takes up, by time, like, way more of the episode.
Yeah.
But I actually think, like, what you're hitting on, what I think is, like, a very smart thematic connection. And I think you just have to remember, like, the political climate at the time. It's like...
Cold War.
It's Cold War, right? It's like the U.S. versus the Soviet Union. And I think you have to say, like, well, if it was these, like, 20th century humans, right, like Offenhaus was, like, running the show, like, they would go in guns blazing and the Enterprise would get destroyed and it would start a war with the Romulans. But, you know, instead, it's like, well, we're not going to handle it this way. How has humanity evolved since then? And that sort of, like, to me, that, like, puts the emotional stakes on this whole Romulan engagement. There's not really a scene where anyone sort of says that, like, they don't draw it out, but I it always made me like the Romulan thing a lot more because it's drawing that contrast of, like, you know, it's a good sci-fi, like, commentary on how we are today.
Yeah
totally agree.
But it is weird to watch, like, how differently all these people react, because, you know, Offenhaus is messing around with the comm panel. He eventually brings Picard into his room to tell him to stop it. And they had this whole discussion about how it's like, look, dude, everything that you built up is gone. It's 350 years later. Your bank doesn't exist anymore. Your banker doesn't exist anymore. Money doesn't exist anymore. Everyone's goal is just to improve themselves. Just chill out for a second. You know, everything that you built up is gone.
Yeah.
And
I feel like
he doesn't understand it.
No, he doesn't get it. And I feel like the Federation needs to have some sort of class to introduce people to what has happened, or human history or something. A short documentary might help when they meet new aliens, or
just
when they get
a little,
people from the past.
A little
some sort of brief thing, like,
instructional
this is what's going
video.
On. They never seem to have a way to tell anybody, like, listen, we don't deal with money.
Yeah.
They just shrug at each other.
Yeah. And speaking of that, this is how they explain it to Sonny, which is one of my favorite parts of the episode. So the reason why they have no need for material things is because they have a replicator. It can make anything you want.
Mm.
He orders at first, like, some huge steak or something. He's like, no, give me a martini.
Yeah.
And he just starts getting drunk. That's, like, the first thing he does. And then he says, can it make me a TV? And no one knows what a TV is.
Boob tube?
Right. And he's like, I want to watch the Braves, see if they're still bad again.
Yeah.
This is 1988. This is before the early 90s and mid-90s when the Braves were awesome.
Right.
So this is before, you know, Maddox and Chipper Jones and the Crime Dog and all that stuff. Like, he doesn't even know, like, that they were going to win the World Series in the 90s. Like, that, much less, oh, yeah, there's this magic machine that can just produce anything you want.
Right.
So he kind of, like, clings to Data. He's like, this guy's cool.
So do you think... So we are able to infer that he's an alcoholic of sorts, right?
Yeah.
But now it's synthahol, and it's not alcohol, and he loves the martini. Do you think he's getting the same buzz off the synthahol that he would off of a martini from his era?
He appears to be enjoying himself and doing things that are wildly inappropriate throughout the episode, so I think he's still getting drunk.
Well, we learned from our lovely fans that synthahol still gets you drunk, but you're able to cure it very quickly. Like
you can like shake it off. That's how it works. So it gets you just, so when you're drinking synthahol, it like gets you drunk, but then you can just like, I don't know what the mechanism is, but you can just be not drunk if you something happens. You can just
shake it off.
Do you
have to take a shot, or you literally be like,
I think that's how it works, because they show, I mean, there's scenes where like the later the 10-4, the like bar on the Enterprise becomes like a big part, an important like part of the set, and the characters are always there and they're drinking their synthahol. And like obviously on DS9, they're in the promenade like getting drunk all the time, and then inevitably like something explodes or they go to red alert and everyone like snaps into action and they're not like drunk driving, like something's going on.
Yeah, so I feel like Sonny would not get his buzz on with this
stuff. Riker drives better after a few.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, there's a weird subplot with him because he's like the comic relief in this episode that doesn't, I mean, I like the character, but there's no reason it needs to be here, because like he takes Data, he's like, yeah man, we're gonna have a party. Or let's replicate me a guitar.
Well, he, great gets a time guitar. To show him the holodeck, by the way.
Nobody takes him to the holodeck.
Put the man in the holodeck.
Put him in,
be
there
in heaven.
So he can, put the man there so he can not bother people. He like goes and he like pats Dr. Crusher on the butt.
Yeah.
Like he's a lot of wreaking havoc.
A lot of good
ship.
Like 80s casual misogyny in this episode. Yeah. Like when the house, no one knows what a homemaker is. Like, what is that? Something related to construction?
Right.
Yeah.
That was a good joke.
He also
asks Data to be his wingman, and it's right. Like, no, pick Riker. You're picking the wrong guy.
Well, he just thinks Data is weird, and he's like, man, this guy's cool. He's a robot. I like robots.
And he specifies there's a difference
between an android and a robot. I did actually keep calling Data a robot in like the first
early
five
the
episodes.
Yeah.
What is the difference?
I don't know.
Robots perform a singular function, I believe, where the android is also sentient. So he's able to make his own decisions and choices.
So he's kind of...
Because there aren't robots. Sean Kelly and I had a long conversation about this on the show, because there's not robots in this universe like there is in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see robots running around doing things. You only see them like shooting lasers and doing mining and like very specific like industrial tasks.
Yeah, but there's not like droids.
No, there's not.
Yeah, it's weird. Where's all the robots? I feel like there's more robots in my life
right now than there are
in Star Trek.
There's a security system here, which is a more sentient robot than there is in all of Star Trek.
Right.
Maybe it's like some kind of Dune thing. Where it's like, we're not going to build robots anymore, guys.
Yeah. Maybe they had an AI situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in the day.
Yeah. So anyway, Sonny is really enjoying 350 years in the future. Offenhaus hasn't really grasped the fact that the economy has drastically changed and that just life and humans in general have changed.
Yeah, he's been a real jerk.
Like,
about
one of the things that Picard tells him is just like, yeah, don't touch the comm panel. He's like, well, if I'm not supposed to touch it, why is it here? He's just like, I don't know. Everyone just knows not to do that. We have self-control now. He's like, oh, that's dumb. So they've got to like drag him kicking and screaming into the future. And meanwhile, Claire is distraught because she does not know why she is here, where her family is. So she has a meeting with Counselor Troy, and they start like searching for her descendants, but they do it basically through Google. And she's amazed. And I know that this is 1988, but I thought it was really funny because it's just like, man, guys, like 15 years from now, this is presented as the most amazing part of, you know, future technology. It's just like, this will actually exist in 15 years.
Yeah.
There is some like pretty like the show stopping technology that like blows the minds of the 20th century people.
Right.
That I think this is also like, this episode is coming at the end of the first season, so they're almost like, the show is almost like recapping, like, hey, look at all the cool shit that we showed you this season, right?
Yeah.
So there's like in one scene, Offenhaus goes into the turbo lift and he's like, where's Picard? And it just knows where Picard is, and that's like a showstopper technology of like, it just knows where he is. That's cool. And then there's also like right when she's like looking for her family, and she's can this thing really work? And then also, like, it can show a picture of any of her family members,
right?
But it does it by like compositing like a 3D model, like, when of course, like, we now know that it's like
Google
image
search,
like a billion selfies on Facebook. But it's like, it is interesting. Like, a lot of those technologies are like just so mundane,
right?
Well, they also say that her great 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 grandson looks just like her husband, which would not happen.
Yeah,
right.
There's 10 generations.
There'd be no way that would be. The genetics would be so diffused.
Yeah, it's weird. But they're trying to tether her back to the reality that, you know, she's in now, because they can't send her back in time.
I just hate that they make her cry the whole time again.
I know. I would be in shock if this had happened to me. Like, I wouldn't know where the hell I was.
But the two male characters are not emotional. One female character, once again, every time they throw a female character in, she's the one who's crying or missing her family or doing something 80s sexist.
Yeah. That happens a lot.
Yeah. They get out of it, I think, later.
Oh, they do? That's
good. Deep Space Nine does a lot better job of representing the supposed equality that exists.
Yeah, they probably got some feedback at some point. Anyway, we're back on the bridge. They're still dealing with the neutral zone thing, remember?
Romulans.
What struck me about this episode, and one of the big problems I had with it, is that, you know, I don't mind the A plot and the B plot. It's just they were so different and weird to see. The juxtaposition wasn't... It was kind of jarring.
And I know you've had a problem with this throughout the series. Early on, they were really disconnected as well.
Yeah, yeah. And this one, I think it's really... Because they're dealing with war.
Right.
You know,
this is also like the MASH like era of television.
Right.
So you have, you know, there's a couple of things that were like interesting about the like context of how these episodes are getting put together. So the first thing is, this show is like a mega hit. If this were on the air with its ratings today, it would be by far the best rated show on television.
Yeah.
You know, people just don't watch TV in the same way that they used to, but there used to obviously be fewer channels, and when a show was successful on one of those channels, like the amount of people that watched it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you have these big broad shows that have to appeal to everyone. They have to work in syndication, so they have to work like out of order.
Yeah.
So there can't be like a ton of continuity between the episodes. And I think like one of the cool trendy things on TV was to like bounce between being this sort of like lighthearted, you know, Star Trek. This is like as funny as Star Trek gets, I think, with this like B plot. And then the more like serious, like in MASH, when you go in the operating room and there's no laugh track, it's like, well, now we're going to have like, here's the lesson of the day, right?
Oh.
I think that's a lot of the tone of early Next Generation is like they're trying to figure out how to balance out like being really serious about the future with like being a little more lighthearted and having comedy moments.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clumsy.
Yeah, especially early. They do a lot better job with it, but the AB storyline does not go away.
Yeah.
They often have, I think for the entire series, there's only a few episodes where it's one story consistently throughout it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the majority of them are.
Those are the ones that I like the best.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah,
but we see the A plot and the B plot intersect right at this point, because they're dealing with the Romulan situation. They're about to approach the neutral zone on the bridge, and Offenhaus gets in the turbo lift. This is the part where he's like, oh, take me to Picard. And he just decides to go on the bridge. Like, nothing bad will happen if he does that.
Right.
And he's immediately, like, accosted by two security guards, who I guess just let him stay, because...
They get distracted by
they
the
comm
screen.
They get distracted by a Romulan ship on the comm screen.
Yeah.
And what they found is the outposts that they were going to inspect, they've been completely destroyed. There's no trace of them left.
Yeah, it's not even destroyed. It's just scooped out of the planet.
Yeah, it's just like they've been disintegrated.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no evidence that this isn't conventional weapons. So they don't really know what did it.
Mm-hmm.
They immediately suspect Romulans, because they're like, well, it's not conventional weapons. We haven't seen these guys for, what, 50 years? Maybe they developed some way to do this. Meanwhile, Offenhaus is like being gently held by these two security guards while he's able to just yell and scream and distract everybody from a very tense diplomatic situation. He wants to, like, I guess, kind of take matters into his own hands. That's the situation he's in as the ship goes into red alert battle stations.
Yep.
It's very weird how these plots intersect.
I think it's supposed to be somewhat of a character moment for Offenhaus too,
yeah.
Because he's been really struggling to sort of figure out
how to
I mean, it's really about like power, right? It's like, yeah. Well, how does power work and how does influence work in the 24th century? And he happens to be on the bridge and he sort of oversees this exchange where Picard logically and peacefully disarms this very tense situation.
Yeah.
And I think it sort of flips his world. I think that that's the moment for him as a character where you're supposed to buy, like, he gets that it's very different and that yeah. obviously, like, a situation you wouldn't have played out like this in his time.
Right. So, what we are seeing on the screen, though, what everyone's distracted by while this happens, is a Romulan vessel, and I'm not exactly sure what it is. It actually looks pretty good for 1988.
Yeah, it looks great.
I don't know if they remastered it or something for Netflix, but...
The Netflix version is not... There is a Blu-ray remaster where a lot of the effects and everything was redone. Netflix is not showing that. Netflix has the old, like, 4x3. Like,
oh.
It's basically, like... It's better than VHS. It might be taken off, like, the Laserdisc release or something like
right.
that.
Yeah, because you can see in it when the stunt doubles are in there sometimes.
Yes.
So the HD is... Or the quality is better than it would have been in standard definition.
I'm pretty sure and it's like 16:9 the Blu-ray footage that I've seen. But also, like, I think this just looks good because it was filmed with models.
Yeah.
In fact, I can't tell. Sometimes in the early Star Trek, they also reused from the films. They reused special effects from the films. So some of this may have been recycled film footage as well.
Oh, well, it looks pretty solid.
Yeah, and an important thing to mention here is the only time you can hurt the ship.
Oh, right.
Because the shields are down is when it's coming out of
it's cloaked.
And so they tease the Enterprise to see what the Enterprise is going to do by showing that they're coming out and then they go back into
right. They're constantly cloaking and decloaking.
Yeah.
And Worf is pushing Picard to attack.
Yeah.
He hates the Romulans. He's like, they killed my parents. You got to. And Picard tells him, you got to leave your emotions at the door.
Yep.
You know, this is important. It's more important than you. It's more important than me. We got to deal with this in the right way. So what they do is they hail the Romulans. They want to talk to them first. And we see two guys that look like Vulcans, which I guess we explained. They're cousins. And they tell them, it's like, hey, you know, our outposts have been destroyed. So they're dealing with the same situation as the Federation is. You know, there's kind of a back and forth. We're like, well, what were you doing in Federation space? And they're trying to mine them for information. And finally, Offenhaus just says, look, they don't know what's going on. They want to get you to tell them what's going on, but they're too arrogant to admit that they don't know.
Yep.
And you kind of see the Romulans just like, yeah, you got us.
Yeah, shrug. Which we knew they were very arrogant.
Right.
Isn't that weird, though, that they're like listening to that whole conversation?
Yeah, and they're not mad at all.
Yeah.
Well, because then they can clearly hear everybody, because at one point they yell at Worf, control your dog!
Right, yeah. So this is where Picard kind of settles a truce of some sort. Yeah,
not an alliance.
It's not an alliance. They make it very clear it's not an alliance, but they're like, look, we're both investigating the same thing. We're both dealing with the same problem. And this problem has weapons that we've never seen before. So why don't we work together just on this one issue, just kind of leave that old, you know, war behind just for a second, and we'll figure out what's going on here. And the Romulans just barely agree to it, and they try to add all these conditions. They're like, only on this one issue, and
only if it suits us.
Only if it suits us. And then they keep going on about, like, insulting the Federation. He's like, all right, okay, let's not go there. Yeah. We need to investigate what happened to these stations.
It reminds me of that line Q had several episodes ago where he goes, Picard tells him to get off the bridge, and he goes, I'm leaving because it suits me.
Right,
and
he
storms out. It's one of my favorite Q lines.
Yeah. Anyway. But this is where the Romulans say, we're back.
Uh-huh.
Which I guess if you were a Star Wars, Star Trek the Original Series fan, and you know, you saw all the movies, you watch this, that would be like, whoa, shit.
Dude, I'm really happy the Romulans are back.
Well, I don't know anything about them, so
well,
this means
trust
nothing
me,
to
me. You'll be happy,
okay.
too.
I mean, I think it's a good sign. Like, one of the things I love about this episode is it's one of the only time I've seen every episode of Star Trek, and it's very rare that you see the crew be flustered or, like, concerned in any way. Like, usually they're sort of, like, very sterile and surgical about their duties. And when you know that they're heading to the neutral zone to confront the Romulans, like, everyone's on edge. Like, they're all doing research, and Picard's like, get your shit together.
Yeah.
It's like the only other time I can think of this happening is in Voyager, after, like before they fight the Borg for the first time, there's some good scenes of everyone like running through the hallways and like spilling stuff. And it's like, it really makes an impression because it's so out of character for how they normally behave.
They're never rattled, really. They're always so stoic. And seeing them rattled, you do notice it when it happens.
Yeah.
So as the episode is like kind of winding down, they close up this B plot by saying it's like, well, you know, we can't take you to Earth, but y'all probably got to go back to Earth. So we're going to rendezvous with the USS Charleston and they'll take you back. Claire, you're going to go meet your great-great-grandson who is in Indianapolis, which apparently still exists, survived all the horrors of the 21st century. And
the horrors that it is now.
Yeah, oh, and...
That's mean.
I wonder if it's easier to get a hotel room during Gen Con in the 24th century.
Yeah. And Sonny's going to go, I guess, party for a while. I don't know. He enjoys the future, so... one of the things that he points out is, I don't see what's not to like about it. Everyone's forgotten everything that I did.
Yeah.
Which he's glad about, by the way.
Yep. And he gets to do it again.
He gets to do it all over
all
again.
All his new music.
And Offenhaus is, he's kind of figuring out what he's, because he asked Picard, there's no challenge. Like, what am I supposed to do? And Picard's like, look, there's always a challenge. You can always improve yourself. And you don't have to worry about, like, material problems. You can do whatever you want. This is freedom. And Offenhaus is like kind of starting to get it. I don't know what he's going to do. Maybe be like a diplomat of some kind. Seems to know how to negotiate pretty well. So he's going to do something on Earth. They're all going back. And Riker, as they're about to set course for, you know, whatever they're going to do next.
Season two.
He says, you know, it's
Grow
a shame.
Beard.
Yeah. It's a shame that we can't keep him with us. It's kind of like going back to the past. And Picard says, no, but we're supposed to go forward.
Yeah, it's the wrong direction.
It's the wrong direction.
Which I love that line. That was great.
Yeah, and then they go on to their next mission.
Engage. Max, at risk of spoiling things, do we learn who the bad guy is who's destroying these outposts?
Well, so there's no way to get to answer that without some light spoilers, but I mean, we were talking about this before we started, and like, you know, the
show
also,
is
like,
very old.
The show, you know, and Star Trek is not, I think it's wrong to, well, specifically Next Generation, it's wrong to watch it and be worried about spoilers, because the show was written for you to see it out of order. It was written to be, it's not a show that's serialized. It's a show that is, you're just supposed to pick episodes and watch them, you know. It was bumped off of TV and local markets and stuff. Like it's not that kind of a show. So I don't feel too bad about it. But essentially, like, one of the big things that was happening in the background, the real world background of the writing of the show, is you had a big writer strike happening in the late 80s, and it impacted production of Next Gen pretty substantially. So this episode was like a spec script. So what they would do is, there was the writer's room that was, at this time, it was very contentiously led by Gene Roddenberry, who was a bad writer, and there were lots of backstabbing and politics and drama happening behind the scenes. And they would basically take pitches from Hollywood writers who would say, what's going to happen? You know, they'd pitch a story idea, they'd pitch a script idea, and then possibly you'd get brought on to work on the script.
Right.
And then there would be rewrites and rewrites and rewrites, and usually Gene Roddenberry had like final edit, and then that's what would get filmed. And that whole process had sort of broken down towards the end of the first season. So this wound up being a spec script for a writer who I believe later got hired to write on the show, but it didn't get the normal amount of writing and rewriting. So that's one of the possible explanations of, like, there's some sort of like out of show Bible moment. So one of them is where Riker's like, well, don't go explore that spaceship.
Right.
Another one's where Picard's is like, why'd you bring these people back to life? Like, that's the kind of world building that normally would not sort of make it onto air.
Yeah.
But it's also a reason that, and I think the episode is just in general, it's clumsy the way that it has tonal shifts and it bounces between the A and the B plots. So, all of this is by way of saying that it was supposed to be the first of a three-part group of episodes where it introduced the Borg. And the Borg were going to be this mega threat. The Borg were going to be this existential mega threat that would, in the neutral zone, that were taking out these outposts on both sides, that would force the Federation and the Romulans
to work together to
defeat a greater evil. And that whole thing broke down because of the writer's strike, and they came back and they wound up doing another terrible episode at the beginning of season two. I mean, a real stinker of an episode that doesn't pick up on these stories. And actually, the story of what happens to these outposts is never addressed.
What?
Never addressed.
This is the second time in a row
because we just did Conspiracy. And they never bring those parasites back either.
I mean, the Conspiracy, another episode impacted by the writer's strike, one of the worst dangling threads in the entire I'm going to say in television history.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How do you never
reference
that?
It's a great ending
again?
Yeah. to that episode.
Yeah.
And then
terrible.
Never again.
Never come
really,
back to it.
Really, 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 really bad. Like, but here's the thing is it's really hard, I think, you know, in this era of TV to reference that again because you don't know that the audience saw it.
Saw
right?
it, yeah.
So
they would
a
have
little,
to know. It's hard to do it to be continued.
Yeah, you have to like push the reset button. Like,
right.
You know, unless there's like a casting change, you know, where like Tasha, you know, leaves the show, obviously. Like, it's very hard to like not press the reset button at the end of the show. So that's one issue with the writer's strike. The other thing is like, I frankly, like, I really like this. This is one of my all-time favorite Next Gen episodes. I love this episode because it's like very directly talking about some of the crazy sci-fi future, like techno-utopian, like futurist Gene Roddenberry themes of Star Trek. And like, you know, this stuff is like, just to step out of like the Star Trek canon for a minute, like a lot of this is like, it's fantasy. It's fantastic.
What?
Yeah. Like, you can't, you're never
going to.
This isn't real.
Like, we're not,
I got a letter from like, John Champion telling like, me that Star Trek isn't real.
It's like, but it's like, I mean like the broad political ideas mm-hmm. of like the, you know, Star Trek's, like the pluralism in Star Trek is impossible, right? It's like, well, this is a problem you see playing out in liberal politics today, mm-hmm. where it's like, is the correct sort of attitude to say, well, all every culture is exactly the same and there's no differences and we're all equal? We're also supposed to go into it and say, well, all cultures are different and we should celebrate those differences and we should take what is unique and special about every culture. Which one is it? I mean, you sort of have to like accept both of those things.
I don't think they ever really addressed that, at least that I've seen.
Well, Star Trek is right. It's coming right at that, right? Right? It's like the Federation is the fantasy pluralist organization, but but it's like they're never going to get into that level of like, well, what level of tolerance is the Federation at? Another one is like economics. Well, it's like it's easy to say, well, there's no money and everyone has infinite resources, but like, where's all that energy coming from? What if there's like one thing and two people want it? Like, you know, there's only so much space on Earth. Who gets to live on Earth, right?
Right.
Who gets to live on the moon? Like, these are problems that are just, they're just sort of like law of nature things that you can't just wave away. So Star Trek sort of tends to have like two strategies in the writing of dealing with that. Way number one, which is sort of the TNG philosophy, is like, this is the more Roddenberry way. It's just sort of hand waving and to say, well, in the future we solve it. And
yeah.
and that's part of the story. That's part of the fantasy you buy into. Mm-hmm. Well, why are there orcs in Lord of the Rings? We're buying into that fantasy of the world, right? And this is a great episode in terms of all of the hand waving that happens because characters like very directly ask these questions. Like one of them is like, well, don't people fear death in the 24th century? No, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Another one is like, well, there's no money. Well, what are you supposed to do with your life if, you know, you have infinite resources, you could have anything you want? You improve yourself. I don't know. What does that mean? I don't know. You just do it. And then the third one is, and this is one that I love where the country music guy is like, what if you don't drink and you don't,
watch TV.
Says, yeah, what do you do? You don't drink and you ain't got no TV. What do you do for fun? It's a great question. What do people do? I mean, they play like space chess all
from
day.
From what I've seen, Riker watches sexy ladies play the harp on a hologram thing.
But
sometimes
like,
he goes to a sad desert in the holodeck.
To me, that's like going to like the beach or going to like a resort or something. It's like, I think it's like 15 minutes for me and then I'm bored and I need something to do. Like, I'm not. So it's like, well, maybe humans are basically a different species where we just don't experience boredom anymore. But it's like, it does seem a little weird. So, you know, the TNG way in this episode, what they do is there's a lot of hand waving. They're like, well, we just solved those problems and you're not supposed to think about it too much. Well, something I really enjoy about Deep Space Nine in particular is Deep Space Nine is very much like picking at that scab. It's
Deep Space Nine is
like, Deep Space Nine is like, well, okay, so there's no currency, but what if you really want someone and someone else has it? Like, what do you do?
Black market sort of thing.
Basically, right?
Totally.
Yeah, like they really, Deep Space Nine like really gets into that. And I find that to be like a much more sort of politically and like philosophically interesting exploration of these sci-fi themes. Though, you know, I also have to keep in mind, like, this episode came out like 1 year after I was born. And, you know, Deep Space Nine, like, I saw that on the air. So there's a big time difference and the world had changed. And you know, maybe this was way more revolutionary and forward thinking at the time that it was on.
Yeah. We always try to put these things in context. But one, you know, I've never seen the show, so...
Yes, you have no nostalgia.
And two, I have no real... I was like 3 when this came out, so I have no real memories of the world at that time.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I think this is a great transition to when we rate each
episode.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
When we rate each episode, we do it on a 3-point scale. If we loved it, if we thought it was amazing and it's essential viewing, we set it to kill. If it's pretty good, comes up in the queue, you should watch it if it's there. It's set to stun. And if you hated it, skip it. There's no reason to watch it. We leave it in the holster. Max, how about you go first?
This is for me, this is a set to kill episode.
Yeah.
So
wow.
Episode guide for TNG, one of the main goals of that guy was to like basically get people past the first season so you could like get into the meat, the good stuff of Star Trek that holds up much better. And I had 3 episodes from season 1 on that guide.
Oh, what are they?
The pilot, which I think you have to watch at some point because it's the pilot. I mean, and it introduces Q and the big thematic ideas of the Next Generation. Then I had Heart of Darkness? The one where Tasha Yar dies.
Heart of Glory,
where Tasha Yar dies.
Skin of Evil.
That was it. Yeah. Skin of Evil, where Tasha Yar dies, because I feel like that's almost like a one of the only continuity things that happens in the entire run of Next Generation, where you just have to know that she died. It's referenced over and over again, and you know, you want to know some of her character relationships, like she was close with Data and all of that. And that episode ties that up. And then my only other episode was this one, which sort of like it does so much to me. It's sort of the closing argument on the thematic points brought up by the pilot. It has a fun sci-fi premise on the B story of like these people coming back to life, and you have some good levity and some great play with like Data, and you know, finally like it introduces the Romulans, and you have that tension of like things are going to get more serious in the run of the show. So I think this is a solid must watch like foundational Next Generation episode.
Awesome, Patrick.
I hate to disappoint you. I'm gonna have to stick with Set to Stun.
Yeah.
It was good. It was a good episode. But as I've been saying, I don't want to do great inflation for Set to Kill.
But you can't keep. You've only given one Set to Kill, I think, so far.
Two or three? I can't remember which ones exactly. I really liked Heart of Glory, one with Worf. And I really liked the one where the second time Q came back. I think those ones I gave Set to Kill.
Oh,
I could be wrong.
I don't think you gave that Q episode Set to Kill.
I didn't.
But, you know, the good news is we can go listen back and prove whether or not we're right or wrong.
Please do what y'all love to do and tell me if I'm wrong.
Inquiry.
Inquiry. Yeah.
What? You can do that?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, the main thing is, so it's good because we get to see a big bad guy that works.
Yeah.
Ferengi did not work as a big bad guy. The Romulans, I don't know a ton about them, but they seem terrifying. Their ships can cloak. They're mean as hell. And everyone in the Enterprise who's normally not scared is terrified of them.
Can I throw out one thing I forgot to mention about the Romulans that I'm curious what your guys' take on this is? Like, weren't they a little like over, like comically like over written, like eviled up a little in this episode? Like, they literally, their dialogue was like, "We will agree to this treaty for as long as it suits us." Like, you just don't say the second part. Like, you know, it's like, that's always,
I like that.
That's like,
I
that's
like
always
that,
implied.
Though.
Like, you know,
I like that though. They can't not be dicks to the Federation. It's just, they gotta do it.
Yeah.
He's compelled to say something shitty after he says something nice. So I thought that was cool. And you know, honestly, the B plot was okay. My only problem was how they interacted with each other. You know, it just seems so out of place. And then some of the ways that the characters that I've come to know dealt with that situation were not in their character. Like Picard asking, "Why did we save these people's lives?" Or Riker saying, "Oh, why bother exploring that thing?" It made no sense. So I got it. Like,
yeah,
I agree. That took me out of it.
Yeah.
To Max's point,
it's clumsy writing, and it does seem very out of character. I'm going to Set to Kill, man.
All right.
Yeah. And you know why?
Outvoted.
Two words. Romulans.
Uh-huh.
And Sonny.
Sonny was cool.
That makes it Set to Kill for me because I feel like he's a real human being. Like, if there's any human being, minus the misogynistic stuff.
Oh, well, yeah.
But if there's any human being who relates
back. This guy
back,
has clearly messed up a lot in his life.
I know.
He's not a good person.
No, not at all, but he's a human being.
He's an interesting character.
Yeah, and I love him. I think he's so interesting. He, like, gets a guitar. He's looking for something to do the whole time. Again, missed opportunity. Put that man in a holodeck. I would love to see what he does with it.
There's a great, this will only make you like him more. So there's, allegedly, there's like a cut scene from this episode where Sonny talks to Wesley Crusher. This is why Wesley doesn't appear in the episode, because they like cut his only scene. And he asks Wesley, like, what kind of, like, music do the kids listen to today? Like, rock music or, like, you know, like, country music? And Wesley's like, what? Like, I don't know any of those things.
Which is crazy that the music in the future is horrible.
We got the hologram harp ladies.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
It's all, like, classical music. What happened to
pop music?
It's
all, like, weird synth stuff that's just kind of ambient.
Yeah, totally.
They could use a little bit of Sonny in the future.
Yeah, hopefully Sonny revolutionizes the music industry, and then we get some good music. No, but I loved it. And then, of course, the Romulan showing up. To me, that makes it essential viewing because here they come. We've got Romulans now. They're part of the world. They're part of the universe that we now have to explore. And they become great throughout the whole series. Romulans are some of my favorite bad guys slash maybe not that bad that we get to hang out with throughout the rest of the series. All right, well, I think that's it. I think we covered it.
Yeah.
This is a whole season,
this
man.
This is one season
we
under
finally
the, under
got
my
one
belt.
Yeah. You know,
this
we
is what everyone told me was the worst one.
Yeah. I think everyone's right.
Yeah. You're good. I have a good... I have one more good Romulan piece of trivia for you.
Oh,
have you guys seen The Wire?
Yes.
So spoilers for The Wire, if anyone hasn't seen The Wire. But one of my favorite pieces of trivia about The Wire is in the entire five seasons of The Wire, a police officer never fires a gun. There's one time when a police officer fires a gun, which is Przybylowski is getting the Chinese food and he shoots another officer.
Yeah.
That's the only time in the entire 5 years of that series that any police officer
Yeah, they're normally just beating the crap out of people.
Never happens. And that was, you know, that's a true to life depiction of how, you know, it's very rare for a police officer to like fire their gun in the line of duty. It doesn't happen that much. So it's very like true to life thing, and it really builds up the tension in other ways because not everything escalates to that point of like a gun to someone's head. Similar point of trivia that I love about Star Trek is like the image of the Enterprise D squaring off with the Romulan warbird where they're right nose to nose, they're almost shooting at each other. That is a plot device that will happen over and over and over in TNG. You'll see that a million times in a million episodes going forward, and they never fire at each other in the entire run of the show.
Whoa.
The only time that they ever fire at each other is like in some sort of like weird alternate timeline episode or something like that.
Wow, I never realized that about Star Trek TNG or The Wire.
Yeah,
I never made those connections.
I never really thought about that.
But there is some sort of good writing happening there. Yeah, but it's like if they ever did do that, if you ever did find out which ship was more powerful, all the air would get let out.
So we're done with season one. I remember early on in Pat Trek, I said, Pat, it gets better. Trust me. And you went, hey, man, I said I would do this. It was one of the funniest responses because it's not like, yeah, I'm enjoying myself. It's like, I've committed to doing this. So how are you feeling now? How are you feeling about the entirety
of season
one?
I kind of feel like it's starting to look like a good show.
Oh, good.
You can tell for the past six episodes, and there have been a couple clunkers in there. I didn't like Skin of Evil at all. Mm-hmm. But the writing is maturing.
Yeah.
You can tell they're learning from mistakes. And I'm sure there will be other mistakes. I will point them out, but it's getting to be a better show.
Yeah, good. It just keeps getting better and
That's
better
what I
and
hear.
Better. Until season seven, then it gets kind of crazy.
Oh, okay.
See, I liked it, but it gets kind of silly. I guess season seven's a little silly, but that's because they were only contracted originally, I think, to do six seasons, and then they all came back for a cash grab for season seven, if I understand
I think just every Star Trek season, it's just some sort of rule of nature with Star Trek that the last season gets corny. Like, I think it gets really meta, where they're like, they know it's their last year, so they're going to do, like, all the wacky stuff they never did during the run of the show, because it would, it would break the characters and interfere with continuity. And the last season just gets kind of cheesy. And it's also a little sappy. You know, you're saying goodbye to the characters and all that.
Yeah. I still enjoy it.
There's some great episodes. More good episodes in season seven than season one for my pick.
Yeah,
congrats on getting through season one, guys. That's like the dark night of the soul of watching Star Trek.
Yeah,
You'll get to... I just pulled up my little episode guide here for season two. I didn't pick a lot of Set to Kill episodes for season two. I actually only have three. So it's season two, episode eight, A Matter of Honor.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Season two, episode nine, Measure of a Man, which
Measure
is actually my all-time favorite Star Trek
episode.
I believe Brian Sebi already called dibs on that one.
Be the guest on it, he loves it so much.
It's a perfect... It's like one of the all-time best episodes of television. It's just a great episode, and I actually recommend that. I'm curious what you guys think when you get to it, but I recommend that as like my starter episode. Like if someone's like, should I start watching Next Gen, I don't say watch the pilot, I always say watch Measure of a Man.
Okay.
And even if you don't know the characters, it's like a better
standalone
intro.
It's good.
And then another Q episode, Q Who.
Hell yeah,
that one's good.
I love Q.
Yeah, Q's great. Well, and then Q and Picard, whenever they're on screen together, it's
just
amazing.
Chewing the scenery. Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's great.
All right, well, Max, is there anything you want to talk about, plug, whatever, before we get out of here?
If people listen, listening to me overthink popular culture and TV and stuff, check out the Unintended Consequences podcast that I do with New York Times bestselling author Patrick Rothfuss, where basically we just talk about like Star Trek and books and comics and just over scrutinize them to the point of self-parody. So it's kind of our thing. But you can find that at unattendedconsequences.com.
Excellent. Patrick?
Listen to Pat Trek. Thank you for everyone that has been.
They are listening. That's how they got here.
I'm just saying.
Maybe they just skipped to the end of this one episode.
Yeah, listen to the plugs.
Yeah.
Leave us reviews on iTunes if you've been doing that. Also, listen to my other show, Politicked Off, with Zach Mast. It's a parody of NPR morning news shows. And we have a wacky guest as we talk about the news.
It's great. They had one really excellent guest, probably a couple weeks back.
Oh, yeah.
Now. I loved that
guy.
The
best one. Yeah. It was you.
That man is nothing like me.
Okay, yes, you played a character.
But my voice sounds a lot like his because I can't do voices very well. And please listen to Making New Friends. It's a podcast I've been doing for a long time. I just had the Shy City Ghostbusters on, which that was a really great episode.
Dave Jensen's in
it. Yeah, David. Yeah, the guy who does our logo work. They do cosplay for charity. They help the Children's Hospital. Anyway, they were really cool people, so please listen to that. As well as we did a live show a couple of weeks ago, and I recorded it as a podcast, and that will be on the feed as well. So please check that out, and that will be on the Making New Friends feed. Oh, follow me on Twitter at Pat Likes a Tweet. Okay, that's it.
Let's see what's out there.
Beaches. Hot sauce. Beaches.